This is the NCARB podcast, where you get an inside look at licensure, regulation, and the initiatives shaping the future of architectural practice. I'm your host, Andy McIntyre, Vice President of Marketing and Communications at NCARB. And this season, we're diving into Pathways to Practice, NCARB's multi-year effort to rethink how architects become licensed.
Architecture is the hardware to the software of life, right? It is fundamentally about that interaction, and it makes life easier if we have a built environment that works.
Across 8 episodes, we'll explore how licensure got to where it is today and where it needs to go next. We talk with architects, educators, regulators, and NCARB leaders about education, experience, and the exam, and why each of those pillars is evolving.
And that portion of school where you go from conceptual to real is also really challenging. It's not something you're really gently moved into. It's kind of like you're doing something that's flowy and crazy, and all of a sudden, wait, you actually have to make this work.
You'll hear how the NCARB competency standard was developed, how research is shaping future licensure models, and what a more flexible, competency-based approach could mean for candidates from a wide range of backgrounds.
So we've seen that in our data as the number of reciprocal licenses starts to decrease a little bit, but that number of individuals who are licensed holds steady.
We also tackle the big questions. Why does licensure look the way it does today? Where do candidates face the biggest barriers? And how can we expand access without lowering standards?
Not everybody fits into the same mold. And so having different pathways to licensure, I think, is really important.
Whether you're a licensure candidate, an educator, a firm leader, or a regulator, this season offers clarity, context, and transparency into one of the most important conversations facing the profession.
Does this requirement to complete all divisions of the exam place an unfair burden on any one group or other?
This is Pathways to Practice, only on the NCARB podcast. Please follow the link in the show notes, subscribe now, and join us as we explore the future of architectural licensure.
My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. My guest today is architect Michael Sweeby. Michael's story begins in an apartment without windows, growing up with a single mother who was doing her best in difficult circumstances. At 9 years old, he started drawing floor plans, not because he understood codes or construction, but because he wanted light, wholeness, and something better for his family. After 30 years in practice, Michael has made a bold decision to challenge the way we serve homeowners as architects. Today, we're talking about what's broken in the renovation system and what it means to bring clarity back to that process for architects. Michael Sweeby, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you very much, Mark. It's great to be here.
It's good to have you here. I'm looking forward to this conversation. You and I have talked offline. I love what you're doing. I love the work that you're doing. I'm inspired by what you're doing, and I wanted to share it with our listeners. And so we're going to talk a little bit about your product that you're building, but you're an architect and you've been practicing for a long time. And I want to know your origin story. So when did you discover your passion for architecture, and who or what inspired you to get started?
Sure. Well, as you preempted here, it's really at 9 years old, right? My parents were divorced. I moved with my mom and my oldest of three sisters into an apartment, but that apartment was a makeshift renovation within a building, and that building was a dentist's office, and that's where my mom worked. And so
you grew up in the dentist's office.
Yeah. So the dentist was kind enough to set up an available space. That space did happen to be in the basement, which literally, yes, not many windows, and certainly not windows where they're needed by code. It was, 1980s, so codes were a little bit more lax at that time, but by no means was there an occupancy certificate for that apartment. And yeah, so, living in a space like that, that was very dysfunctional as far as living conditions, but also having been witness to the split of my family, of my parents, I picked up architecture in the form of, you know, drawing floor plans just on graph paper at 9. And
do you have any idea what inspired that? Where do you see that? Where do you learn how to do that?
You know, it because of the contrast between my house and my friends' houses, I really just wanted to capture how they were living in floor plan layouts, right? And, you know, because that's how apparently, you know, whole families live. Ones that are still have both parents and they have each had a bedroom and that's nicely lighted with windows. And so I was just really inspired by these homes that my friends lived in.
And you were naturally creative?
I think so. You know, before that, before 9, I was always doodling, always drawing people, always drawing, you know, outside of typical gable roof houses that you would see a kid draw.
Right.
But the meaning of it became a lot stronger when my living situation changed.
Yeah.
And so, you know, through all the way through to college, you know, I knew from at age 9, like, I'm going to go into architecture school at Ohio State. You know, and into my career, starting in 1994, any new graduate would get any kind of job at that time. And so I worked with a lot of different commercial architecture firms.
You worked in Ohio after you graduated?
No, my first job was in Indianapolis in 1994 for a year. And then I went to grad school at Rice in Houston, which really talks, you know, that's also, it's a Master of Architecture degree. Yes. It's also a urban design degree. So the city is really, and how it functions is really part of that curriculum at Rice. So after I graduated from Rice in 98, it was an onslaught of, you know, working at 12 different firms in Houston, in New York City, mainly. And then my final sort of job for somebody else was in Montclair, New Jersey, where I am now. And that was a good mix of commercial and residential. So that was my really first taste of actual projects that are houses, you know, both from scratch, new builds, as well as additions and renovations. In contrast to other projects we had at that firm, which a lot of pizzerias and churches and all the good stuff, you know, Mark, from New Jersey.
Yeah. And Montclair is sort of an urban suburban town.
Yeah, it's pretty dense, lots of traffic, mainly houses, but yeah, they, you know, we have 5 town centers, they say, business districts.
And a pretty high-end market as well for the houses.
Very high-end. In fact, a little bit later on, we'll talk about the Montclair market for residential work. It happens to be one of the most expensive to build in, along with just Long Island and San Francisco, but we'll get into that in a minute.
Yeah.
So seeing the mix of projects, commercial and residential, I got a real good taste of the different client types. And naturally and obviously, I would gravitate toward the residential homeowners and their projects. Why? Because here's a family that they know that they're dysfunctional in terms of their living pattern. And that's my forte. That's where my heart and soul is, to help them figure out that puzzle. The financial risk that homeowners take, in my experience, is a lot greater than it is with commercial work. So setting up a project for them at the very beginning, you know, with programming and finances, it's really important to walk them through those things that they have to think about in order to have a successful project. And what I've found is commercial project owners are a lot more adept. A lot of times they're facility managers that are taking on projects.
A little more savvy.
A little more savvy. They know how to write RFPs. Homeowners are nowhere in that forest and they're really lost. And so I started my practice in 2013, right when my son was born. I was on paternity leave and I said, I think I need to prove to my son that I can be my own boss. I don't know. That was sort of a weird thing to do, but it worked. And
yeah, I had similar inspirations.
Yeah. So 2013, all house projects I've had since then, about 300 clients in and around Montclair, Northern New Jersey. And up until the pandemic, it was the same pattern. And I'm sure a lot of your viewers have seen this too. A lot of homeowners reluctantly approach architects for their project, or they started with the contractor and the contractor said, hey, you need some drawings. At least in New Jersey, you do. And so they think of, you know, approaching an architect in a certain way. It's more of a luxury, but it's also kind of a necessity. It's something they'd rather not do. But through the, you know, the course of talking with them, then they start to see like why this is important. But the first, you know, few years of my practice, it was the same pattern. They come to you sort of not knowing what their project is, not knowing what their budget is. They know they need to get a quote from a contractor, but contractors, again, at least in New Jersey, they say, hey, you really need drawings from an architect for me to be able to price your project. So they get drawings. They still don't know what their project costs. And then they set up a consultation with me and we go through, what do you want to do? And the contract that I developed really just stated in these early years of my practice, what do they want to do? All right. And then I'll provide drawings for that. Still not talking about any costs. So, you know, 3/4 of the time, certainly in the, you know, late 20 teens and into 2020, we do drawings, you know, they put me on retainer, which is a good chunk of money for any homeowner to put an architect on retainer, pay for the drawings. We send out to the contractor. The contractor comes back with the cost. And as we all can guess, it's usually 2 or 3 times more than what they have thought.
Right.
That either causes a lot of friction, a lot of accusation, a lot of arguments.
A lot of finger pointing.
Yep. Or it shelves the project for God knows when, or it just completely destroys the project and, you know, never happens. And again, that's 3/4 of the time is what I saw. So into the pandemic, obviously people weren't coming into the office for consultations and I couldn't go to their house for at-home consultations. So virtual meetings were very important. Zoom was ramping up at that time, so it was kind of serendipitous. So all of my consultations, you know, during the pandemic and to this day, they start with a virtual call, which I'm now calling an orientation call. It's really, all right, what do you want to do? And as they tell me what I'm doing, I've developed a spreadsheet that inventories what they want to do, and it also applies costs for each of those line items. And those costs were based on projects I did with local contractors in the area. So it's really pricing based on what previous project was. So it's still not completely up to date, and it's certainly not a good projection a couple months out or a year out when construction starts on this new project. But it gets people in the ballpark. And what I found about telling them what they told me in dollar signs, it really opens their eyes, and most often it prevented them from jumping off the cliff with deposits and or putting deposits down on contractor materials. It saved them the burn later on.
Do you charge them for that process?
Starting, it was all free consultation, right? And then through my consultants, marketing consultants, I'd say, hey, this is work. Don't you want to get paid for your work?
Exactly.
So then I started to charge, and it was an hourly rate. And I could get through a consultation in 4 hours. And so 4 hours times my billable rate at the time, that's what I was charging for the consultation.
Did anybody push back on that when you decided to start charging for it?
Yeah, by design.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, you know, if it's a free consultation, you'll get all the tire kickers you can ever find coming, you know, knocking on your door.
It becomes a filter.
So yeah, the filter only brought people in that were really serious about doing the project. And certainly in the pandemic, certainly for New Jersey, we had a mass exodus of people from Brooklyn, Manhattan, who needed to get out of the city during the pandemic and set up a home that was a little bit more breathing space. Their kids were obviously going to school remotely. The parents were working remotely. So these new project types started to sprout up of, we need a space for our kids' schooling. We need an office space. That really generated a ton of projects. And 2021 and 22 were an onslaught of work. And we were just bringing it in and not really thinking about And no one really could think about the price effect that the pandemic would have with the supply chain and the lack of availability and just how much it was going to increase prices. So that was a bit of a chaotic period. But coming out of it in 22 and 23, when, you know, I could have consultations back in the office or go to their houses, prospective clients' houses, the value of the spreadsheet and the cost estimation ahead of being hired is very valuable for homeowners.
Right. You're managing their expectations.
Yeah. It's completely boring at the beginning because I'm not designing and I love design. That's why I got into architecture. But, you know, the what do you want to do and how much does it cost? Really plain vanilla stuff that's not exciting, but it's the batteries. It's the life, you know, vest that keeps your project afloat and prevents you from getting in the boat if you don't have it, right? So, yeah, it just sort of worked out that the spreadsheet was a really good tool to use. And I thought, you know, I should really automate this. And it has evolved into an online marketing funnel, sort of a lead magnet that I'm using. I have, you know, Google Ads wired to it. And so really any prospective client comes my way, goes through this automated spreadsheet, and they can fill out what they want to do already and get a price quote ahead of asking me for a consultation. So they come to me ready. They pre-qualify themselves. And I don't charge for that consultation anymore because they're doing the work that I did with the Excel spreadsheet, right?
So do they have access to that for free?
They have access to that for free, yes.
So basically, you said it's a lead magnet. So they're giving you their email and their contact information in order to access this tool. They go through the process. They self cost estimate, basically say, here's what I want to do, or I think I want to do. And your tool gives them a number.
That's right.
And then they say, I want to talk to Michael.
Exactly. And it's pretty granular. It's broken into, if you're doing any renovation, interior renovation, remodeling, reconfiguring, and it also has a section for additions, and it has another section for general upgrades, like if you need to replace your roofing or replace windows or siding. And they just go line by line. They don't look at any numbers and hit the CTA and generate the report, and the software emails them the outline with all of their line items and all the line item costs. And so they can see, all right, well, I asked for, you know, renovating this powder room. In Montclair, it's going to cost them $20,000 to do that. Maybe I don't need to do that. So they can go back to the tool and revise their answers and generate a new report. And they can just hone the budget until they're satisfied. They say, okay, this is what I know about my project. And most homeowners have to, you know, jump over the hurdle of, I don't know what my project needs to be, and I'm relying on an architect or a builder to tell me. And that's, homeowners have to stop that because really any consultation I've had with anybody in my area, they did know what their project is, at least a good 85%.
Right.
And then that extra 15%, that's where I come in as the architect, you know, provide my expertise, try to add some novelty that exceeds what their expectations were, right? That's how I think projects should work. So any homeowner that's telling you, well, I don't know what my project should be, they're lying. Or they're kidding themselves. So this online lead magnet helps them just brainstorm, organize their project thoughts, really see, all right, are these nice to have or must have? They can even start to think about, well, maybe I'm going to break this project up into phases and this first outline will be the first phase. And then, yeah, as you said, once they are where they're happy with the outline, they, you know, there's a link to set up a consult with me in the email that they receive with the outline. And so that just goes to my calendar and I see them at the consult for the orientation call.
And you do that on Zoom still?
Yeah, on Zoom.
Yeah. It's a great idea. You're flipping the system, right? It used to be that they go to a contractor, the contractor sends them to you, you do a whole bunch of work, charge them for that, then come back with a price, and then they're surprised and the, you know, chaos starts. your system totally flips that over. Before they even talk to you, they're going to a tool that you've given them access to. Now you've also have their contact information, so you know they're a warm lead. But what it also does is that you arm them with the information, right? You're saying, okay, here's what you need to know. And then they go through the process. They take ownership of that now, right? This is what we want, and this is what we can afford. So when they finally do come to you, now they're coming with information, right? Their expectations are set. They're educated in terms of the process and the cost of what it is, which holds them accountable, right? They can't point fingers back at you and say, well, you know, I can't believe it costs so much. Well, they've decided what the project is. They've gotten a number. They've approved that number before they've come to you. So you start off with a very positive relationship with this client because now they feel they're armed in terms of, you know, with information. That's not a good term for that, but, you know, they come educated and become a much better client.
And qualified, pre-qualified. So the outline, the report that they get, I've called it a brief, I've called it a report, but what it is now is a qualified project outline and RFP. So it's, I want to put the homeowner in position of, they authored this information.
I love that. I love that.
And basically they're sending out an RFP like a commercial project owner would do.
Right.
Right. Yeah, we're making homeowners more savvy.
Yeah, and they take on the responsibility of that.
Right. So, and the outline also estimates not only the construction cost, but the project timeline. So they know the steps that an architect's going to go through, schematic design, construction drawings, bidding, permitting, construction observation or administration, and the construction itself. So they know how many weeks, months, the whole endeavor is mapped out to be. So that's another way that homeowners can arm themselves when they approach an architect.
What happens when they use that tool and they go somewhere else? How do you deal with that?
Well, one, I don't know that they have. I mean, this lead magnet is really in my marketing funnel. I assume they did. The traction that I've had last year, was I had, when I rolled out this lead magnet, and 40 users in my area, and of those 40, 16 requested consultations. So, you know, what about those other 24? Either they were just surprised by the cost and they had to rethink it, or they went to somebody else.
Yeah, or they were tire kickers, right? They're playing with a fun tool. Let's see what it costs, right? I go to the Porsche.com website all the time and build my future car. Right. I never buy it.
Right. Exactly. Because it's free, also free access. Yeah, you're going to get tire kickers.
Yeah.
But 16 out of 40, about 40%, I believe that is, that's a pretty good.
Yeah, very good.
Rate of, you know, and they all converted to consultations. And of those consultations, 6 converted into new clients for me.
Pre-qualified clients who are happy and ready to roll.
Exactly. And weren't surprised at the, well, maybe they're surprised at the high ticket number, but they're ready to go for it.
Yeah. And every one of those clients is an ideal client, right? They've already gone through this entire process. They're exactly the type of client that you want.
Exactly. And the projects are better quality also. The clients are more qualified, but the projects themselves are, you know, juicier, make more sense. They're not requesting things that are way out of, you know, the stratosphere. Because of that, they're more likely to be successful. Not only the cost that they've agreed to, but the scope is realistic. And so it's really, you know, they're hitting the ground running instead of, you know, you pulling them out of the woods when they're in a consultation. It's really great.
Yeah, fantastic. So what's the plan for this tool?
So the lead magnet that I have, which I'm calling Scopify.
I love that.
In tandem, it's being developed as we speak through a developer out in Irvine, California. So Scopify will be available. We're launching probably mid-March at this point. We're still doing some QC and testing. But yeah, it's going to be available on the App Store and Google Play.
Well, congratulations. That's really exciting. So you've taken this tool that you've built for your own firm, built it into this automated spreadsheet that basically pre-qualifies your clients and makes your life much easier. And so somewhere along the line, you've figured that if it works for you, why don't you offer it to others? What was that process like? When did you have that light bulb moment when you thought, well, this is not just something that I could use. Maybe I could offer it to the rest of the architecture community.
It happened on my 53rd birthday, a couple of years back. I was just seeing that this spreadsheet that I was using with my virtual consultations was working. It was translating pretty well. It was keeping homeowners safe from financial risk, and it was bringing the ones who are ready for the projects up to the starting gate. But turning 53 was, or how many more years do I have to help homeowners in my area? And the answer is probably around 150 more families. And I thought, that's not enough. You know, if I can contribute something to the world, I want to do it more than 150 times for 150 families, right?
Yeah.
So let's look into rolling this out nationally so I can help thousands of families instead.
What was that process like that when you decided that you're going to turn it into an app? How did you do that? How did you know who to talk to or what to do?
So I didn't look long and hard, actually. It was through my marketer. He said, you know, this spreadsheet, I bet you a lot of architects would like to buy this from you. So it's buying a spreadsheet, buying software. That was sort of the seed. But instead of a spreadsheet that would only be useful to architects, I really wanted to get it into the hands of the homeowners for all these reasons we're talking about. So they can, you know, not take such a big risk hiring service providers. So I said, all right, well, maybe this needs to be an app rather than a spreadsheet, because the spreadsheet is really, you know, I know how to work it. I know the language of it.
Yeah.
As another architect would easily as well. But I think its usefulness is more in the hands of the homeowner. So, and I think an Excel spreadsheet is a little clunky. I'd rather the experience be like any other app.
Yeah.
You know, like going on DoorDash, for example, or building your Porsche, right?
So how did you find the developer to help you build that?
I Googled app developer and took a guess, hunch at which one looks solid. And it was one that was based in Florida and they outsourced to India. And I did talk to them. I had an interview and I didn't know what I knew at the time, right? They would be very decent at making the app itself. But when I wasn't completely convinced by that interview, I looked at, you know, entry number two on the Google search results, and it was this developer in Irvine who just really sold themselves well. Their sort of mantra, the founder's mantra, is this whole endeavor is, it's about 20% your product, but 80% your business and marketing. So they have coaching online. It's just been a wonderful experience. You know, they have a university, Founders University, they call it. Because I wasn't going to learn about how to build an app, right? That's for the developer. I needed to learn how to have an app business.
Right, right, yeah. Do you want to share who that company is for anybody who might be thinking they might want to do something similar?
Sure. It's Naked Development in Irvine, California.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
Naked Development. That's a memorable name.
Ideas, they strip everything away and make it just, you know, what you need.
Yeah.
Really good schooling. I feel like I've gotten an MBA this past year with working with them. And they've been very supportive. And if I hadn't gone with them and just gone with an app builder, I don't know if I would have been able to get this off the ground.
Yeah, you'd have no idea what you're doing in terms of, you know, the technical side.
Yeah.
What about funding? Is this all bootstrapped?
So far, it's all bootstrapped. I do have a fundraising campaign through the crowdsourcing platform WeFunder. And I'm at the community round. This is super pre-seed. It's really just to get to and through launch. And the funds, the majority of the funds will be used for the ad spend. The co-founder of Naked is actually my interim CMO. And so he's on contract to get this rolled out and into the hands of 10,000 users. So that's our goal. And hopefully we'll reach 10,000 by June or July.
So if our listeners wanted to be part of the fundraiser, you know, if they're listening to what we're talking about here, they like what you've done, they value the mission that you have here with Scopify, and they want to be part of this fundraiser, what's the best way for them to learn more about that?
Yeah, the value is really for customer investors, which would be architects. Homeowners, yeah. You know, my family fundraised, friends did, contributed, invested. But for architects, it's owning the platform that, you know, feeds your business. And there are incentives if you do invest, and you can go to wefunder.com/scopify.3, and that's my campaign page. And we're in the community round, so it's really early on, and we just want to get to launch, to and through launch. But it's the valuation of the company is the lowest that it's going to be. I think it's right now 1.35 million. The minimum contribution investment is $100 on WeFunder. We're really looking for some players who want to move the needle a little bit more. So yes, of course, the more you invest, the bigger return you'll get. There are incentives depending on how much you invest. Basically, we're giving away free leads purchases with increments of how much you invest. If you invest $1,000, we'll get you one free lead. $2,000, two free leads, on and on. So it's a pretty good perk.
Yeah, I love it. So it's WeFunder, WeFunder. So WeFunder.com/scopify.3. That's where you can learn more about it. We'll have a link to that and Scopify app as well. It's all in the show notes. So go there, check it out. So if you want to invest, go check it out. WeFunder.com/scopify.3. Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our sponsors for their support of this episode. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by WeCollabify, one of our trusted allied partners. As this community has grown over the years, one thing has become very clear to me. The partners we choose matter. Allied partners are not sponsors. They're not advertisers. They are organizations that we've taken the time to get to know, to work alongside, and to trust. They understand the real pressures of practice and the responsibility that comes with leading a small firm. WeCollabify earned that trust by helping small firm owners address a challenge that sits at the center of long-term firm health, building capacity in a way that supports people, not just projects. Their insourcing model brings skilled design, BIM, and technical professionals directly into your team. They work in your time zone, inside your systems, and part of your day-to-day workflow. That integration allows firms to add capacity when it's needed, scale with intention, and grow without sacrificing culture, leadership focus, or quality of life. If you're thinking beyond short-term fixes and focused on building a firm that lasts, I encourage you, go learn why WeCollabify is one of our trusted allied partners. Visit wecollabify.com/entrearchitect to learn more. That's wecollabify.com/entrearchitect. Gain lessons learned and credits earned with Arcademy, ARCAT's continuing education program. Listen to popular episodes of the Detailed podcast and earn AIA-approved HSW credits. Yes, you heard that right, HSW credits for episodes of Detailed podcast. Listen to an episode, check out the learning objectives, and use what you've learned while listening to take the course. The program is free, it's simple, and can be found at arcat.com under the resources tab, or just go to arcat.com/arcademy. That's arcat.com/arcademy. That's arcat.com/arcademy. Please visit our sponsors today and thank them. Thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. And your market is homeowners, is who you're looking to.
So the current ad campaign is to homeowners. Yes. We started with an ad campaign toward architects. I put together a short list of architects in all 50 states, well, 10 to 15 in each state. And that's kind of the supply that we need, because there's so many people, we need so many people to roll out RFPs, so many homeowners to roll out RFPs. We need the architects to have them, and we have the architects. You know, they're waitlisted. most of them don't even know they're on the wait list. So it's really hard to get to architects and have them see the value proposition for them to green flag joining Scopify as a service.
What does that business model look like for architects?
So it's really all about how are you qualifying your potential clients? And, you know, I've been on Thumbtack early on. I've been on InHouse, and they will bring leads to you, but they're highly unqualified.
Right.
And one reason is because their team is not your marketing team. You need to look for the traffic that works for you. So what an architect would do with Scopify is really outsource the qualification process. And when an architect, and when I didn't have Scopify, you know, you think of all the unbillable hours you spend getting not only a homeowner as a new client, but just getting a homeowner qualified to the point where then you just need to make the sale.
Yeah.
And that's really, in my mind, that's midpoint in a consultation. What is the average spend that an architect is sort of wasting in a way, getting an unqualified lead to a qualified position by themselves? And we're estimating that it's about $7,500 to get prospective client qualified, and then another $7,500 to convert them into a client.
Yeah.
And we don't track these hours, and we don't, you know, we're not actually paying for it. It's just eating out of your profit. So instead of spending $7,500 in unbillable hours, the qualified leads that come to architects through Scopify, when an architect is interested in responding to an RFP, they pay Scopify $500, and then they can engage that homeowner. And the homeowner is sending out the RFPs to whoever they want to on the platform, of course. Mm-hmm. So they're really shopping around, but they're shopping around as a qualified homeowner. So it's really outsourcing the qualification process. And instead of paying $7,500 to do that, you can pay $500.
I love it. I love the business model. And not only do they come pre-qualified, they come, like you said in the beginning, they know what the project's going to cost. They have the accountability. They have full responsibility for their project. They're ready to roll. And so for $500, that sounds like a pretty good value.
Yeah, I think so. So the big question that a lot of architects would have, and a lot of builders, because a couple of years out, maybe builders will be part of this platform as well.
Yeah.
There are a lot of homes that can be built and renovated that don't require architects. So we want to get contractors on this as well. Yeah, contractors don't do drawings per se. Design build, maybe they do. So it's going to be a certain echelon of contractor on the platform.
You started talking about builders and how they don't do drawings, but you could use builders and you could match up the builders and the architects, right? When there are
exactly
a need for drawings, it goes to both the builder and the architect.
Right. So a whole pipeline is going to be extended through Scopify, right? And it eventually will be a platform where a little bit of project management on the architect's side, but really on the homeowner's side, project management.
Yeah.
It can be collaborative on the platform as well.
Very, very interesting. So what's your ultimate goal? You said that as an architect, you might be able to impact 150 families. What's your goal with Scopify?
So our goal for the first year here after launch is we'd love to see 40,000 homeowners signed up and on the platform.
Yeah, I love it.
And so following the traction model, I don't know if it's going to be the same for every architect in every state that I experienced with the lead magnet of, you know, 40% consultation rate. So 40% of users sending out RFPs. That's the goal of generating RFPs and understanding that we need a certain number of service providers, architects first to catch those RFPs. You know, we're working the numbers and seeing like how many do we need to get on board, but the goal would be, I think at this point, about 6,000 service providers, architects across the country in the first year that can handle the amount of RFPs coming out.
If the listeners want to learn more or get on a wait list, is there a way for us to do that?
So I have a URL that they can go to, both homeowners and architects. It's a different URL, but it's Scopify app, all one word, .com. And that's for the homeowners, and .com/provider for the architects. And you can go there and get on the wait list for the launch. And once the app is launched, your information will be pulled into the platform. So you already be signed up.
Awesome. And thank you for sharing this. I think many architects have ideas in this flow of work that they do. They come up with like, oh, this spreadsheet that I've developed, maybe someday I could turn it into something. And here you are, you've developed this tool for your own firm. You see the value of it. It works for you and you want to get it out to the world. You want to have an impact on the way architects and homeowners work and fix this problem that we have of the system where it is such a messed up system where the homeowner doesn't know what the cost of the project is until they've done a bunch of work and spent a lot of money. And then you lose a project because they're not prepared. And so this is a great solution for that. So I applaud you for developing it and putting it out there and then inspiring others who may be doing similar things that have similar ideas that want to have a bigger impact. So I appreciate you for sharing your story.
And yes, you're right. There's a lot of darkness over the homeowner's situation and we're trying to eliminate it. The pain is much more for them than it is for architects.
Yeah.
I hate to see a homeowner not be able to do their project, but getting paid to do the drawings, you know, I walk away with money and that just hurts. It's unethical, I think. So hopefully this app is going to fix that problem. And if I could add one more thing that I've just remembered, the hurdle with architects sort of buying into this idea, one of them at least, is the cost algorithm. Yeah, this works for me in Montclair, New Jersey.
Right. I should have asked that question.
But we have a deep algorithm that has applied construction cost indexes across the nation. So we calibrate the cost to the location, and it's down to zip code how we figure out construction cost estimates. With Montclair, and as I mentioned earlier, Montclair, Long Island, San Francisco, they're the most expensive to build in. So that's kind of our baseline ceiling in a way.
Right.
And everything else in the country is a percentage of that. So that's one. And then the other is a lot of architects have a lead network already, lead gen network, or they work on word of mouth referrals, or they have a backlog of projects. So they don't need a service like this. My response to that is, even though you're being recommended a new client from a past client, that new client or that new lead from your network is still unqualified. You have to qualify anybody, no matter where you get them from.
Right, exactly, right.
And I'm hoping that Scopify is a place where homeowners will go to qualify themselves.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Before we wrap up, I have one question that I ask everybody that I'd love to get your answer to. You've been running an architecture firm for a long time. Now you have another business that you're building. And so what's one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
It really has to do with dropping the ego. You know, I got into architecture because I love designing and I wanted to be the best designer. And it was competitive in architecture school. And, you know, was I better than this kid? Was that kid better than me? The best one with the coolest design was the winner. And yeah, clients, when you have your own business, clients do want something that looks good. And some of them even want something that's cool, right? Or novel. And that's fun, but that does not sustain your business. You really have to get out of your own way and maybe delegate more of the designing, you know, be the overseer. But as far as running your own business, you have to delegate everything that you don't want to do and also what you like to do. And you need to focus on what you like to do and what makes the office money.
Yeah.
And the big part with architects, and I'm guilty as well, is you have to get out of your own way.
His name is Michael Sweeby. The company again is Scopify. I love that name. It is scopifyapp.com is the website. And if you want to get on the waiting list for providers, it's scopifyapp.com/provider. So thank you, Michael, again, for sharing your story here, sharing this inspiration. I appreciate you for doing that. And I appreciate you coming on here at Entree Architect Podcast.
You're welcome, Mark. It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, please share a link with a friend, because that's how we've continued to grow and serve thousands more small firm architects just like you. Thank you to our sponsors for this episode. Links to the sponsors and all the resources we discussed today, they are all available in the show notes for this episode at entrearchitect.com/podcast. Entree Architect is a proud member of the Gable Media Network. It's the multimedia network moving the architecture, engineering, and construction industries forward through the power of storytelling. You can earn AIA continuing education credits by listening to select episodes of this podcast and many others at gablemedia.com/members. And if you are a small firm architect, listen up. Join us today at Entree Architect Network. It's the worldwide community for entrepreneur architects. We've been around since 2012, and our basic level is now free to join. Yes, you can join Entree Architect Network for free. And that gives you access to valuable business resources and our global community of architects. And you can upgrade anytime for live coaching, AIA approved training, and mastermind support. So visit entrearchitect.com to learn more and to get started. My name is Mark R. LePage. Thank you for listening to the Entree Architect Podcast. Love, learn, share. Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.
Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.